What's up, folks? Welcome to another episode of Junior NBA Coach's Corner. Today, we are discussing how to teach the pick and roll. We will be joined by professional basketball player consultant Vasi Prokofiev, and as well as longtime NBA coach and currently assistant with the Sacramento Kings, Alvin Gentry.
Welcome to the Junior NBA Coach's Corner. Here are your hosts, Dallin Cuff and Monica McNutt.
Great to have you back here, folks. Welcome to another episode of Junior NBA Coach's Corner alongside Monica McNutt. I'm Dallin Cuff. Today we're talking about how to teach the pick and roll. Now, Mon, I think this is interesting because you graduated Georgetown in 2011. I left Columbia in 2006. I think we're like in that generational gap where the pick and roll was part of our offense, but was it literally like the staple like it is in a lot of different offenses now? Was it as important to you guys? Did you drill this all the time, how to play out of pick and roll? Because we didn't really do it that much in retrospect.
So we ran the Princeton. When I was at Georgetown, Jock III was still there. So we ran a piece of the Princeton. So there was one pick and roll at the top of the key for our point guard by five that was we drilled all the time. And it set up everything else, whether you're going to get that corner shot, whether your pick your five was going to pick and pop. So that one play we drilled. But I tell you what we drilled more, Dallin, is how to defend it. Like, we were the team that blew it up and called for traps and kind of we played off of that top defender. But yeah, I don't know that it was as much a staple as it is now for me either, other than that one spot.
It's funny you mentioned, I have nightmares of coming over that flare screen at the top and then getting that pick again on the Princeton offense. We played against JT3's teams too. That was not too fun. We suffered a couple of tough losses that way, but we're not going to go down that path. Let's talk more with the guys that are here to break it down for us. Our first guest was born in Russia, played professionally in Mexico and Ecuador. He currently is a pro basketball player consultant specializing in on-court sports performance training and has conducted clinics all over the world. Welcome, Vasi Prokofiev. And our next guest brings more than 35 years of coaching experience to the bench. He served as a Pelicans head coach as well as associate head coach of the 2015 NBA champs, the Golden State Warriors. He has also served as head coach of the Heat, Pistons, Clippers, and Suns. Currently, he is the associate head coach of the Sacramento Kings, Alvin Gentry. Fellas, thank you so much for joining us today. Coach Gentry, I want to start with you and kind of a similar discussion that I think you just heard Monica and I briefly having. The game has really changed in the last 10, 15 years to being very, very reliant on the pick and roll, keying a lot of what teams do offensively. And as Mon pointed out, the focus of a lot of defensive schemes as well. As you've seen the game change, how has your perception changed of the pick and roll and its level of importance at the NBA level, but also just cascading down as the NBA tends to set trends for everybody else?
Well, I think you're exactly right in that it's really changed from a pick and roll standpoint. I think if you go back to the Patrick Ewing days and, you know, so many of the other big guys, the offense was predicated on coming down and dropping it into the big guy and then, you know, obviously him making plays for you. It has completely changed. And I think if anybody has watched the playoffs so far, into what has happened, you go back and you look at Trae Young. I think Trae Young and Capella has exploited almost every single defense that you've thrown at them from a pick and roll standpoint. And, the Steve Nashes of the world, I think that's when it started to trend in the way of the pick and roll becoming a vital part of the offense. And I think you can see it now with Lillard and what's happening with him. And, you know, you can just name tons of guys where, basically you're going to see about, 50 to 60 of those a game. Almost every other possession is going to be a screen and roll.
So, Vasi, how have you seen it change? Obviously, you have a very international perspective. How have you seen the pick and roll become more relevant in where you were coming from, or was it always as important there and it's maybe in the States it's different? Give us a little perception of from an international standpoint.
So if we take in Europe, one thing that I see is sometimes, now coaches may want their fours to be able to play pick and roll as the primarily ball handler. So it just gives me, it gives me more tools where with the big guys, I can work also on something with that where they'll be facing up the basket, not only in the post.
That's such that stretch four like has changed.
Yep.
Five like has also changed the game, especially in that pick and roll. So when we get down to the nitty gritty of this and teaching it, right? You needed a very incredible ball handler that can make the right read off of it. And then there's the techniques to the screening part of it. When you start teaching the pick and roll concepts by the internationally, what are the first steps in that way?
So first of all, I wanted to say, like, when would you start teaching it? And if I say like that early 11 or 12 year old, sometimes it may be too complicated. So before even teaching the pick and roll, I would focus more on the concepts, like for guards, like creating the contact, maneuvering in the tight spaces, passing the ball with one hand, being able to change directions and drilling it not only on the court, but also in the weight room. So even when starting to work with someone who's 12, 13 year old, I would focus on those details first instead of telling them about pick and roll. Just so by the time they turn maybe 14 or 15, we can focus on the details. We can focus on different pick and roll coverages and different reads, because if I give them right away the reads and what they have to know how to do, that's just going to be too much. So I'm trying to break it down into small parts and just learn those small parts.
That makes sense. Makes very smart sense. Coach, when you, obviously you get guys at the pro level, they know the fundamentals, they know the basics. I guess the next evolution of that, when you get a hold of them, is the reads according to that offense?
Yeah, that becomes very important. The guard reading the situation. And actually it starts with the big guy. We initially start by the angle of the screen and what we're trying to accomplish. You know, are they trying to get over the top of the screen? We want to push them over the top of the screen simply because it creates that two-on-one situation with our big rolling and the guard against their big guy. And, you know, there's some elite defenders in the league that can play both. But for the most part, you know, the Anthony Davises of the world are really, really good at that. But for the most part, the guards in this league are become really good at reading those situations. And once again, I'll go back to Trae Young, because, you know, we've just seen him the other night and what he's done. And that I think what happens is that the read is that if you get in those situations where the big is in that drop position, then, you know, you have to have the floater in your game. You have to have your big rolling, trying to get behind their big to create that two-on-one situation. So I think it becomes really important, the read for the guard, but it becomes really important of setting that screen at an angle where you can create those situations that you want to have take place.
Coach, I don't know if you know this, but I work for MSG. So can we talk about Luka instead of Trae?
Hey, trust me. Hey, Julius is my guy, man. I coached him for 1 year, my favorite guy. It's just unfortunate. You know, they didn't play to the level that they did during the regular season, but I can understand the pain there, really. Yeah. Trust me, I've gone through it so many times.
Dude, Luka's they're all out of their mind. But watching Luka sometimes, I'm just like, this just looks, it's crazy. The whole thing's crazy.
It's a video game. It's a video game. It's like watching Steph Curry, you know, it really is.
Yeah.
You know, you see those guys and you go, oh my God, it's like a video game.
I know we're talking a ton of offense, but Coach, how do you defend it then? Because it seems that whether you talk Trae, Ja coming down on it, Luka, Dame, like you said, like, the question continues to be, how do you defend it? And in Luka's case, he's got such a size advantage that he just throws his weight around.
Yeah, it's been unbelievable. And believe it or not, we beat those guys three times this year. and none of them was because he had a bad game, okay? I think the last time we played him, we end up winning at third place. And we come in after the game and think that we've done a good job on him. I think he had 39. So, you know, that's a good job on him now.
Bossy, you talked about teaching the basics of stuff and for younger players, 11, 12-year-old. Coach, you mentioned the angle of the screen, how important that is as a finer detail. But as we're talking about, the guys in the NBA, Coach Gentry, we're getting, you know, they have PhD levels in terms of how they're handling this stuff. If you're talking to young coaches right now, or people like Bossy that are working people out, what do you want the 10, 11, 12, 13-year-old to truly understand as the fundamentals or the foundational pieces, so when they get, as they progress, they can actually, they're building properly to get to that point? What do you want to see the youngest people do to start to learn this with the right way?
Well, I think Bossy is right by breaking it down. You got to almost compartmentalize it. The first thing I think is that, you know, the setting of the screen becomes important. You have to actually make contact with the defender. You know, I think a lot of people stop at one step short of making a contact. guys are too athletic and just too smart in this league. If you do that, you give them an opportunity to go over the screen, under the screen, and that's what you don't want to create. You want to create the situation where you're making the contact and you're forcing the defense over the top of the screen. And then I think secondly, as a young player, what I would talk to the guard about is that, you know, everyone uses the shoulder to shoulder. When I set a screen, then that ball handler has to come off shoulder to shoulder, so you don't create that space where they can get over the top and slide and then recover and square you up again. So I would say those are the two basic things that you want to start with. And then obviously there's the reads that happens, you know, when you're attacking the big, you know, when are you going to make that pocket pass, or when are you going to decide that he's off far enough that I'm going to shoot a floater, I'm going to take it all the way to the basket. So those are the I would say those are the elementary stages of it. And then obviously it gets a little more complex in our league with the defenses that are thrown at you.
Bossy, when you're working with younger players, as you just heard Coach go over some of the basics that I'm, I know you're teaching them the same basics, but they're obviously seeing Luka and Dame and Trey and Steph, and you want to emulate what they're doing, but you got to work your way there. How do you manage kids' expectations and make them do the A, B, and C well before they stop trying to, you know, stop behind a ball screen from 30 feet and shoot it, which I'm sure they want to do. Like, how do you manage the young player to put the building blocks in the right place?
Actually, that's very simple. So if you're working with a young guy who's playing in Russia's top league, and doesn't matter if he's with the vet on the court or if he's just by himself or with the other younger guys, all they need to know is just they only have 2 or 3 dribbles max, especially if them coming on the court as role players, it's not going to be them dribbling the ball 4 times. So the emphasis is, okay, you have 2 dribbles max, 1 dribble to get through the screen and 2nd dribble to make a decision. And so when player understands that, there's no way he'll be over dribbling or shooting that pretty crazy shot. So that's not the issue for sure. And I also wanted to add on what Coach Gentry was talking about. One thing that I find effective is if you can talk to players and help them visualize the situations, it will also give them more freedom when the actual game is played. Because now when the coach is telling them what to do, some players may only listen and may not understand everything right away. But whenever the practice is over and whenever all the physical reps are done, they can start their mental reps right away, where they can think, and even with the eyes open or with the eyes closed, where they think, okay, what if the defense plays this? What should I do? How would I make a pocket pass? How am I going through the screen? Is it shoulder to shoulder? Should I be lower? Just the more details a player can imagine, can visualize, easier is going to be on the court, because our brain can't differentiate whether it's something that you've done physically or this is something that you thought about. So if we take a visualization for 1 month and then half a year passes, in half a year, it's going to be hard for you to recognize whether you made those left-hand pocket passes or it was something that you were thinking about. But when the game actually starts, you may feel more natural making them. And so it's easier for you to make proper reads.
I'm all for visualization. I love that. Now, Bassi, you mentioned that 3 dribbles for the guard. How are you instructing your guys that are setting the screen in this action? Like, what's their footwork? What's their rules?
So first of all, is just finding the contact. Find the contact. See when primarily ball handler passes you, whenever he hits you, that's going to be the time when you can either roll or pop. And then based on the player scouting and based on how the defense is played, there's going to be an instruction, either it's going to be a slip or it's going to be a pop. So that's one. But then the biggest thing for me here is to make them play based on the situation, not based on what I want them to do. And so in order to train that, I'm creating kind of like one-on-one or one-on-two situations where they basically, let's say they play one-on-one and they play in off the screen. So let's say I'm going to be the screener and then the defense is going to be my defender. And let's say he's playing drop, the first one, whenever the ball handler goes through the screen, that's going to be the one-on-one situation. And they, first of all, you don't have a pass. You have to create something for your own. And then as the player gets more comfortable with that, we add another player, just so it's going to be kind of like 2-on-1 where a player has an option to pass. and just making sure that it's not something they moving with the flow, they moving with the situation in the court, not just what I want them to do.
So, Bosco, you're talking about obviously having small sided games, having 2-on-2, 2-on-1, building into a 5-on-5. Coach Gentry, how would you, when you think back in your coaching days and when you were younger, as you're trying to build up in the industry, how would you advise younger coaches in terms of teaching the pick and roll to, well, they're learning too how to teach it, but also building out a program where it's, okay, we're going to go 2-on-2, 3-on-3 and adding in the other pieces that create another reads. Like, how would you, what do you think is the most effective way to kind of teach this, but also to learn it?
You know, I think what Bossy's saying is exactly the way you want to do it. I mean, I think just the whole impact of breaking it down, we call it part method, you know, teaching, and we do exactly what he talked about. You know, we start with just the guard handling the basketball and the screener and reading those situations. You know, the NBA has changed so much now. All the pick and rolls used to be exactly that, pick and rolls. And now you've got so many big guys that are pick and pop guys. You know, when you think about Cat at Minnesota and, you know, Lopez, Milwaukee and those kind of guys, you know, that you're reading it completely different now than you normally would in a situation where everything is just a pick and roll, pick and roll, pick and roll. So we start and break it down exactly like that. What we like to do first, though, is that we like to put that big in a drop defense, which most of the teams are playing in the NBA now. And we teach the guard to get over the top, and now you're attacking that big. And, you know, you're just attacking. And then we'll add the role situation where now you got to read the big. Is he playing you, or is he dropping back with your guy? With the role guy. And so now you've got to make those decisions quickly. And we try to do that to the point where it becomes instinctive, almost like, you know, 1-2 dribbles. Now you're making the decision. I know Bosie said something about 3 dribbles, and that's really about the limit, you know. 1-2, now you got to make a decision. Am I going to be the open guy? Am I trying to attack the basket and score? Is it a floater? Or do I see him in a situation where now I can get it to my role man and he scores? Obviously, the pick situation is very easy to read. You come off, the big is on a drop position. You know, obviously, then they're going to have to rotate with a low man to try to get all the way out to the shooter. And that becomes very difficult in our league to do because of the distance that guys are able to shoot the basketball now.
Mm-hmm. It's not undefendable, but it is a very tough play to defend when you got 2 capable scorers involved.
Oh, yeah, like Steph Curry. Yeah. it's impossible.
when you think of the way that it's evolved, Coach, has it met its ceiling, or do you see even more room for guys to just have even deeper range, like the 4 and 5s to be even more versatile?
Well, I don't, you know, I think what Steph and what Dame has done, which with screen and rolls, have made it a completely different situation. There's no way that you can play those guys in a drop position. And now when you're up, you know, trying to run them off those shots, it opens up everything from the standpoint, you know, especially with Draymond, he's a playmaker also. Or you get a guy like Lopez, who, like you're saying now, they've stretched their shooting range out so far that it's almost impossible to get back. But, you know, from where those guys are shooting, you know, and I think everybody's getting there. You know, Trae Young has moved this range out even farther. Steph and Dame has no limit to their range. So it just makes it that much more difficult to try to defend the pick and roll, because now you've got your big up and he's being challenged by a guard that has the ability to drive by him or have the ability to move that shot 3 or 4 steps, 5 steps out from the 3-point line.
Bossy, I don't know if this is off topic, but it might be a little bit. I want to know, as you're working with younger players, 10 to 17, 18, the guys that are typically be 4 or 5s in terms of their size and stature, do you even drill post moves anymore? Or is it primarily them setting, being the screener and then coming off screens, all guard skills? Like, do you drill any post moves traditionally anymore?
I do. And okay. even for the guards, we do some post work. For example, I'm now with Russian national team, U16 girls, and we have one of our point guards. She's actually leading this season in post catches. And that's funny. She's only like 5'7" or so. And so definitely post plays are important. And also, just like I mentioned, playing ones off the screen, similar is going to be when we're working in the post. And I want to create that mismatch already. I want that big guy to be in the post against the guard, just to see how the guard is managing to play defense and vice versa. I want the guard to be in the post against the big and try to explain to the guard that here your advantage is your speed, your movement. And so if you can, in the post, if you can do 1-2 jabs, turn and be like more in the face-up position, let's see how the defender, how the big guy is going to defend you and how well he's going to be laterally.
It's sort of simple, but it is, I mean, it's just so tough to defend. You guys both have mentioned the angles at which your four are setting the screen. So I do want to have a couple questions about that. How do you define the two? Is it, I guess one is flat versus one being shoulder to shoulder, coach? What are the differences in terms of that screen?
Well, from an angle standpoint, you just want to make contact. And like I said, our whole goal is to force it, the defender over the top of the screen. So the way we teach it is that you got to get below the defender and then come back at an angle that his only option is to kind of go over it. You know, there's so many teams that now have decided to go under screens for the most part in our league, not with the Steph Currys and the, you know, Dames of the world, but some of the other guards, even with Luka, I think sometime everyone tries to go under the screen with him. But what happened with that now is that your bigs are taught that anybody that goes under, that guard has to take one or two extra dribbles to create now another angle where on the rescreen, he's almost forced to go over the top. It's hard to go under twice. And so once there's a under situation defensively, then our bigs are taught that you're going to immediately go back and rescreen, and that creates the over-the-top situation, and now you're right back to the same thing.
Coach, one other thing to follow up on, if you're asking college coaches in particular, because that's the guys you're inheriting, that or players coming from Europe or South America, what do you want them to be better at? What do you see that is are there common themes of guys that need to be better at X when they get to the league, as far as it is playing or defending the pick and roll?
Well, I think from a plan a pick and roll standpoint, I think what happens and what is happening so many times right now is that the screen is not set. We call it a peel out, you know, where we're going to try to obviously get there and slip out of a screen. I guess is what Bozzi would call it right now. But I think with the way the defenses are right now, you want to be able to set that screen because you want to create that two-on-one situation. If you're slipping out, sometimes that guard has the ability to just slide defensively and stay with the screen, and now there's no advantage there. So the first thing you want to do is make sure that you're setting that screen in those situations right there. And the angle of it becomes very important, like I said, because you want to get below the screen and not create that angle where they can just slide right under. You know, especially for the majority of the guards in this league, that's how defenses would like to play, to slide under. Obviously, there's exceptions to that, as I talked about earlier, you know, with the Steph Currys or the Treys or the Dames of the world. But, you know, the other guys, you take your chances with that. So you don't want to be in those situations. From a defensive standpoint, I think it's very important in pick and roll situations that you get into the ball. When that screen comes and he starts to go over that pick, then you have to get into the ball and you have to try to beat him over the top where you can regain the advantage and square him up and you're not trailing the play. That becomes the most important thing. And then in your big situation, in any drop situation, he's got to be smart enough that he's got to play too. You can't ever help uphill in those situations because obviously the lob is there. So you got to be able to drop and fake at the basketball, yet be able to get back when that pass comes. So those are the two most important things, I think, defensively.
Ooh-wee. easier said than done defending that thing.
No one can do it, but that's kind of what you'd like to see.
Literally, as you're talking, sitting in agreement with all the guys and the question being asked, why did Taj continue to back up in the Knicks-Hawks series when Trey came off? But it's exactly what you said. You're teaching your screen defender that they've got to be able to stunt to defend the two. And so he knows Clint Capella is behind him. And while it was sort of maddening to watch, it is the way that it's taught. And those guys just work it so well.
Yeah, and I think you're right, Monica, in that, I would say right now they're the elite guys, you know, because of Capella's role situation. Mm-hmm. He's so good at it that it opens up a lot of things for Trey that if he was just average at it, that would not be available for him. And it's very difficult because you're talking about a guy in Taj that's a very good defender, and that's been what kept him in this league so long. But he put Trey put him in and Capella put him in such a tough situation. You know, am I going to take the floater away? Am I going to get back to Capella? And what happens is that you overextend one way or the other and they hurt you with the opposite thing.
This is a great conversation, guys. We appreciate it so much. Before you go, though, I want to make sure folks know about the eCoach platform. There's literally hundreds of videos out there with former coaches, NBA coaches, and across the spectrum teaching the game, particularly NBA coaches. Coach Gentry, you gave us a little breakdown of the pick and roll pocket pass. Let's take a look.
Let's talk about the pocket pass. There's a pass, an alley that is open, and it's only open for a short time. And that's why the ball handler has to be good at reading situations. So when we come now and we get the screen and we get this angle over the top, and now he's staying. Now you can see right here, we create one little alley right here. You know, we call this a pocket pass. And so we want to try to hit him at an angle where he can take one dribble and lay it in the basket, or he may not have to take any dribble at all. But we just got to make sure that when that pocket is open, that we get the ball there, because it's going to collapse. After one, two, three dribble, it's going to collapse. We just got to make sure that we read the situation and get it there. So now we want to get that same angle of the screen, get him over the top of the screen, and there's the pass right there where we can lay it right in the basket, okay? You can see the pass open, and then they're going to try to deflect it with their hands, but we've got to be good enough that when we see that pocket right there, that we get the ball there right away. Here we go. And I think it's very important for the guy setting the screen, we talk about two things, and you can do it either way. We talk about opening up. As he comes off the screen, he comes off, I can open up to the ball and create the pocket. Or in some certain situations, guys are much more comfortable when he comes off to just turn and go to the basket. So you can do it either way. There's no correct way of doing it. It's wherever you feel comfortable, but you gotta be able to screen and you gotta be able to get off this right away. So he comes, I screen, and there's the pocket right there. So we gotta make good contact to force our guy to defend the ball. We gotta have whoever I'm guarding, if I'm guarding the guy setting the screen, the ball handler got to force me to guard him for a dribble or two, and he's got to set a good screen to cause that situation. So we got to make sure that we make good contact to create the pocket. So the second phase of your screen and roll offense is that if the offensive player cannot turn the corner and get to the basket, then your second read is going to be to look for the pocket pass. And that pocket pass is going to come because not only is his guy getting over the top of the screen, but the defender guarding you has to take the ball handler for one and two dribbles. That causes a pocket pass, and the ball has to be delivered where the offensive player can now take the ball and lay it right in the basket.
Great stuff, Coach. Good breakdown. Anything else you want to add in terms of the delivery of the pass, or anything else you think folks should be aware of? And Bozzi, please tag on if you like.
Yeah, I would say that you have to anticipate what's going to be there. And I think this is where Bozzi comes in with the young kids, the repetition over and over again, of breaking down this drill where in those situations, like I said, the pocket open and closes quickly. So you have to anticipate where that opening is going to come. And with the great shooters, it's gonna open up a lot quicker because that defense has to be up and respect the fact that he's coming off and the jump shot is available right there. So you just got to be able to read that. And then, as I said, the role man is going to be the guy that's going to be very important. We tell our guys, once the ball handle is even with you, then you have to start your roll right away. And as I said, you know, you can open up, you know, completely. Or in our case, when we had Amari Stoudemire, who, in my opinion, one of the best finishers ever to play the game, with he and Steve Nash doing it, he simply just got out as quickly as he could. Sometime he opened up, sometime he did exactly what I showed you in the drill, where he just made sure that he was out and rolled into the basket right there. So those are the things that I think as a young kid, you have to become aware of, and you got to be able to see those things. And I think that's what Bazzi is saying. He goes through these drills so many times that it becomes almost an instinctive thing for the younger kids. And as they grow older, obviously they get much better at it.
Coach Gentry, I got a question. What angle options for the screener would you give here?
I like I said, as in our case, we wanted to force the defense over the top. So we tried to get the bottom half of his body where he couldn't go under the screen, but now he's fighting over the top of it. So we used like the bottom half of his body as the target area to screen, that almost forced him over the top of the screen.
Okay, and if you see the player, the screener, setting the screen in a poor angle, would you stop it right away, or would you come to a player after whenever he's done that?
No, we like to stop it right away, because, you know, when we do these drills, it's almost like a teaching situation anyway. And so if we can correct it with the whole team there, then it's something that everyone sees right away, and then I think it's corrected, so you're not breaking it down, you know, by individual guys or whatever.
Great stuff, Bazzi. Appreciate the questions at the end. Everybody is in this trying to learn as younger coaches coming in. So that is great stuff, Coach Gentry, Bazzi. We appreciate your time, and good luck as you guys go forward in the summer months here.
We want to thank our friends at the NBA Coaches Association and eCoach for providing instructional content from their eCoach video library to give our listeners an insider's perspective on how NBA coaches teach the game. For more information and to access the library of more than 400 videos, go to eCoachBasketball.com.
Thanks for listening. Make sure to join Monica and Dallin each week on the Junior NBA Coaches Corner. For more, go to juniornba.com or wherever your favorite podcasts are found.